vegetarian, then paleo. You stopped restricting. You're trying to love yourself more, but nothing seems to be working fully. And you might feel hopeless about ever feeling good in your body. And every time you fail, you trust yourself less. As the larger world feels increasingly in peril, caring about how you feel in your body may feel frivolous and even more hopeless. We are at a time when our individual and collective stories about what to do for our bodies, health, and the world are crumbling. Because these stories we have, they aren't working for how our bodies or our world actually works. And I believe centering our bodies, all bodies, not just thin, white, or quote, good bodies, and what all of our bodies need to thrive will help orient us in a better direction. There's no one-size-fits-all diet, exercise, or way to biohack. Good health is much less about willpower or discipline and more a complex interweb of our societal structures, food choices, emotional history, environmental exposures, and privilege. There is a great loss of certainty and safety when we initially have to face what is real versus the half-truths we've been fed. But the loss of these stories creates an opening. If this opening is pursued with curiosity and discernment, we can discover our awe-inspiring ability to create and embody a new body story for our physical and political bodies and the earth. I'm Ali Shapiro, and I host the Insatiable podcast, so we engage in the type of conversations that will lead us to radically new body stories for ourselves, each other, and the earth. To do that, we discuss a more truthful approach to freedom from cravings, emotional eating, binging, and being all or nothing. We explore the hidden aspects of fighting our food, our weight, and our bodies, and dive deep into nutrition and behavioral change science and true whole health. But fair warning, this is not your parents' healthcare or the conspiratorial crazy of the wellness world. This is a big rebel gathering to those who want to hold nuance, context, and complexity in order to lead the way to a healthier future for all, because our lust for life is truly insatiable. Hello, everybody. Welcome to season 13, episode 6, Values Gap Driven Body Discomfort. And we're going to have two of my clients, Charlotta Hibbs and Margaret Louise Vicente, who we call Mags, on the podcast to help really show some clear examples of what we mean by this values gap driven body discomfort. So this is part of our food as safety season to orient you. If this is your first episode you're listening to, or just as a reminder, in our first four episodes, we have traversed the first four foundations of my process called Truths with Food, which is we established the origins of why food equals safety, that the root of stress eating are stories that make us feel unsafe, specifically that we might be exposed as separate in some bad way, and thus our status and how much control we have over our lives are going to be compromised. And these stories, which are a mix of facts, are what actually happened, and then what we think happens to us means about us. In other words, what we're told to think about that in relation to why it's our fault or what it means about us is heavily influenced by Puritanism and Protestantism, division of Christianity, for lack of a better word. And this is even if, like me, you don't consider yourself religious. And then in episode 4, we talked about the various protection strategies we use in our stories that, again, if we don't know their stories, we call ourselves stress. So we have protection strategies in our stress. And we've often used those so long that they think are our personalities, like foodie, emotional eater, or perfectionist. And then in episode 5, we talked about supporting our nervous system and how our body, not just our brain, informs our mindsets, like diet starts tomorrow, or chuck it, F it, eating, or we binge to co-regulate our nervous system. Truths with Food honors that to change your eating and exercise mindset, it's not enough to just focus on your thoughts or to try to use willpower. In other words, we're not just using your brain, we're going to also get your body, which is a projection. I'm sorry, your mind is a projection of your body and brain together. So we do that with food and we do that with stories, safety. In today's episode, we're going to focus on how to choose differently in our stories today. In other words, how do we work through our stress for more fulfillment, which feels like more emotional safety, which not only dissolves stress and stress eating, but it just makes life so much more fun. In my programs, we call this option C. It's the choice that isn't all or nothing or black and white. When our stories were forming, especially when our sense of safety was being compromised, we usually only had a safe or bad choice. For example, when I had cancer at 13, the safe choice was to listen to the doctors and the bad choice was to not and most likely die. Or I used to think to lose weight, the safe choice was to diet or I'd be out of control. For both my health, weight, and how they are intertwined, I now know there are sustainable, fulfilling options in between versus thinking doctors have all the answers or you need to feel hungry and deprived to lose weight or deprived to be healthy. Option C is, how do I want to respond to my stress today? What is available to me that wasn't available in the past? What is satisfying, not sacrificing my health and soul? This is what builds psychological safety. It's trusting we have our own backs and will support ourselves to advocate for the truth and the goals we want to pursue. And over time, with the right approach, this leads to really feeling at home or comfortable in our bodies. Because body discomfort can move us from ideas about what we value to better embodying those values. And this values gap matters deeply right now, especially as old structures crumble and we have a profound chance to build something new. When I surveyed my newsletter readers back in April, a common survey response theme was, I feel uncomfortable in my body and I feel ridiculous that I am focused on this when there is so much else that is so much more important to deal with. And look, I so get this. I felt this way about my own weight struggles when 9/11 happened, the US invasion of Iraq era, and I was volunteering to get the boat out in 2004. Today's world issues feel much more urgent and complex. Yet what I've discovered in this time since then, the past, I guess, almost 20 years, is that tending to our body discomfort is not ridiculous. With a holistic and root cause resolution approach, like Truce with Food, it will reveal where we are out of alignment with our values and that the values we rail against out there are often inside us that we are embodying. I share with my newsletter list how my own recent body discomfort of the last couple of years, I'm out of it now, was a piling on of attention to my own values gap. I was exhausted. I had plantar fasciitis, insomnia, low immunity, perimenopause symptoms, and 30 pounds of post-pregnancy weight, 30 extra pounds. For me, I wasn't battling food. Rather, I was battling overworking. I kept pushing despite being burned out, and I could no longer overwork as a new mother, especially one who was going through menopause. Now, this may seem hashtag Captain Obvious. However, our stories, again, based on episode 2, they are an emotional elephant we're all riding on. So to not overwork felt like a huge risk to me. I didn't know why, but I used my own truth framework to address the gap between knowing what I should do, yet why wasn't I doing it? In this case, why couldn't I slow down and work less? Because I'm seasoned enough in my relationship with my body to know it has more knowing than I can yet verbalize. And I especially need to pay attention to being uncomfortable in my body because that means I'm at an important crossroads. The long and short of it is I had to confront that while I rail against capitalism and its destruction of our health and the earth, I embodied capitalism's hustle culture, always be productive and busy values, so much that I thought they were me, my type A personality. In reality, I was perpetuating the capitalistic values I claimed to oppose because these values brought me success, a meaningful career that I love, financial security, freedom, and recognition. I had to examine, though, are these values really me? Or are they what other people told me were important? We are all, hopefully, in a time of a great reshuffling of our values. We all need to get clear on what most deeply matters to us, because what we've been told to value is not serving us or our humanity's future. Values clarity and honesty requires our body feeling clear and comfortable. It's difficult to hear the truth when we are in pain, stress eating, and are burned out. For me, I had to get clear on what is enough with my finances and mothering. because capitalism orients us towards unfettered growth. This means you can never work, accomplish, or be enough. I was able to self-author my own enough success values for this phase of my life and experiment with valuing slowing down. Now, as someone who grew up middle class and has been hustling since I was 12 when I started a babysitting business, this is a massive shift. I work way less now. I enjoy my life so much more as I don't always feel behind. In slowing down, I savor what I do have. I've uncoupled career and life success the last few years. I have the energy and capacity to parent Essa, my son, the way I want to and really enjoy him versus having work hanging over my head all the time. Of course, this still happens, right? This is not about perfection. And I've had to ask myself, test out, because that's what we do, which is what the next episode of Insatiable will be about, experimenting with new stories. Will I make less money? Maybe. Will I have less opportunities? Maybe. Less recognition? Maybe. And what I've discovered in this process is I really measure things differently now. Do I have enough money? Yes. And I can say now that it's the end of the year, I can say I actually made more money this year and worked less. Now, this is not the coach that's going to tell you, see, that was a self-limited belief that you have to work harder to make more money. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. I was at the stage of my business growth, right? I'm 15 years into this, where when I took a hard look at what was actually moving the needle and having an impact, a lot of my work of people who actually come to my programs, it's word of mouth, right? Which is beautiful because I've been doing this for 15 years. So my clients tell other people. That's that in this podcast, right? Which I love doing. So getting discerning about what is actually essential in my business versus really understanding what I need to do for impact versus being busy has been a game changer. Am I fulfilled? Yes. And I feel more holistically successful in my life, both in my work and my non-work success. Do I trust myself enough to figure out if the winds of enoughness change? Yes, I do trust myself to figure it out because I know I can change because I got the tools and I've done it before. These metrics matter more to me now than just more, more, more. Because ultimately, the feeling of enoughness is what I think we're actually after with more success and more, more, more. And the side effect of my new enough success definition was being able to have the time, energy, and focus to tend to my body. I resolved all the issues I was having, including a 20-pound weight loss during the most stressful period of my life. Yes, the last 3 years, I should say 2.5, have been the most stressful of my life, I think. The values of rest and slowness have emerged. I learned how rest is its own form of divesting from patriarchy and white supremacy, thanks to Jordan Maney. Highly recommend checking out her work. I feel comfortable alive in my body means I have more energy and capacity to contribute to my local community and neighbors, which is the most potent place for social change. This is one small example of how your body battle and collective change aren't either or, it's both. They are interconnected in so many more rabbit holes than just this example can illustrate. And I think my conversation today with Charlotta and Mags is going to really show you how some of these values that we have are the same values that are keeping up these really sick systems. And yeah, they're crumbling here and there, but they're also still exerting their power. I share all of this because if you're uncomfortable in your body, working through your own values gap is part of your work to do for you and a more healthy world for all of us. To provide more examples of values gap-driven body discomfort, I'm bringing on 2 Truths with Food clients who just wrapped up to help give you a real taste of the grit and glory involved in self-authoring our values. With Charlotta and Mags, they're going to talk about their values revolution that includes but isn't limited to breaking up with perfectionism, productivity, the patriarchy, and unhealthy independence to try and do everything yourself. I hope you feel inspired by the path they've chosen, which is out of the matrix of normal. Because the Western world's overculture's main values are patriarchy and control, as we will talk about much more with Charlotta and Mags today, especially around this idea of discipline. And these values don't work with how the body works or a meaningful life happens. Now, I know rebels, outsiders, and misfits are mostly who listen to this. And we especially crave freedom and purpose. But I want to show you how we are also at the mercy of embodying lots of norms and values we might think we aren't. To do this, I'm relaying what Tara McMullen, host of the What Works podcast, taught me on episode 398 of her podcast, Good Bodies. Highly recommend Tara's work as well. On that podcast, she discusses a 21st century philosopher, Guy Deleuze, who says all the messages we receive on the regular about freedom, pleasure, and purpose are merely a facade for a society of control. Tara shares that Deleuze explains how society was originally organized around sovereignty. And it's funny because I see this word going around the wellness world a lot, sovereignty. But in cultures, when society was organized around sovereignty, there was a ruler. And then there were those who had to live by those rules or risk severe punishment. Think of the errors of kings and priests. You avoid breaking the rules in those societies because you fear the guillotine. Right? This made me think of Galileo, who was forced to recant his scientific discoveries because it threatened the power of the Catholic Church. Or in their words, it was contrary to the Holy Scripture. Or as the Indigo Girls sang, Galileo's head was on the block. The crime was looking up the truth. Okay, that's the most you're ever going to hear me sing. I know I don't have a good voice, but I freaking love the Indigo Girls. Tara explains how societies of sovereignty give way to societies of discipline, which she says Michel Foucault describes as organized around institutions. So homes, hospitals, schools, factories, prisons, and barracks in the army. Each institution had expectations around a moral code standard. So if you want to have an idea why we even think in terms of good and bad, this is part of why. If you transgress by going outside the norms or breaking the rules, each institution would punish you through rehabilitation. If you were a toddler, you're sent to time out in this mode of discipline. You're sent to the principal's office and maybe detention. Or at work, you're put on a performance improvement plan. She says you would stay in line to avoid the unpleasantness or shame. Then she shares, Deleuze added a third type of society, societies of control. In societies of control, the boundaries between institutions break down. There's no difference between school, work, home, or church. Institutional codes of conduct become meaningless because these institutions are now boundless. Instead of institutions, we now have what's represented as the ultimate freedom, a society that is tolerant, acceptive, and inclusive. And of course, we know that's fucking not true because we have internalized the standards of conduct. In other words, these institutions are boundless because we embody the values that they taught us. And my clients who are interested with food are in the Truth Coaching Certification. You know, that's the socialized mind, right? Or in my clients' language, our ideas of good and bad are based on these moral codes. As a result, we police ourselves and others, Tara talks about. She says we become constantly under surveillance through anxious self-monitoring or worried about what our coworkers or others think. We don't need punishment. We punish ourselves. So if you think of we have like the DNA of our genetics, think of the DNA of genetics of these institutions of control are now just passed on to us, their little offspring. And we think we're free, but we're still controlled by what they value. Pretty fascinating to think about, right? And I can't thank Tara enough for this understanding of where we are culturally in terms of values and being free to be who we are and others who they are. Now, the most cynical view of this is that we haven't really evolved that much in terms of freedom from the days of kings and priests. We just think we have. A more hopeful view is that part of the backlash right now against women's bodily autonomy in the form of Roe versus Wade being overturned or hate crimes against LGBTQIA, Jewish people, and others is because more marginalized people are actually making progress with their own freedom. Progress in the United States has always been met with backlash and regression. But that's a debate for another podcast. What I want you to take away from this is that many of us have a values gap that is driving our body discomfort. Because we define discipline as control and health only about your ability to control your weight and aging body and beauty. And our worth is based on our ability to override our body's needs and control our productivity and look like it's all easy to do it. No wonder our collective weight is at an all-time high and collective health, mental health included, is suffering so much. And based on what I shared above, no freaking wonder, right? Growing up in America, I'm told to value freedom. I value freedom. But I never was like, what does that mean? Right? And took a hard look at it. So I've been gaslighting myself for a lot of my life. to inspire you to bring some genuine wonder to your own values and how this radically shifts your relationship to food and life, we're now going to chat with Charlotta and Mags. One brief thing about mental health. Our conversation did take a little bit of a detour into mental health, and we do talk a little bit about suicide. So if that is triggering for you, it's in the second half towards the end. So you may want to skip the second half, or you just may want to skip this episode. But I know this is a longer one. I think it's worth the length, especially when you hear how they have shifted their values. It's one thing to say, okay, I want to value slowness. Or Mags talks about a deeper value around beauty. Okay, it's one thing to say that, but how do you actually do it? And we get into that today. So enjoy, and I'll see you on the flip side. So welcome, Charlotta and Margaret, who we call Mags. Welcome to the pod. How are you guys feeling?
Good.
Good and nervous.
Good and nervous. Yeah, same.
Yeah, we just, before we got on, everybody, we had a big discussion about this. So, but they're like, as our friend Sass says, bravery feels like ass, right?
Feels very, very assy right now. Yes.
Well, thank you guys both for doing it. It means a lot. And I know so many people are going to learn from your experience and really bring this concept of our values, especially a lot of people are going to be listening to this at the end of the year, the new year. And I think a lot of us want to, when we change, we think, well, here's, what do I value? What are my values? And I hope today people see that it's values, kind of even the way we assess them, need to undergo a resolution / revolution. So when I say to you guys, food equals safety, how do you understand that pre-truce with food, and how do you understand it now? Charlotta, we'll start with you and then we'll go to Mags.
Safety, since I've been doing quite a bit of the food journey, so it's been a lot kind of in the emotional eating, and you know, it's protection, it's an escape and all that, which is, we kind of got to that, at least it's not just about stop eating. But that was more of a concept from the outside still for me. It was still more mental, even though we say emotional eating and comfort eating, it was still very mental to me. And now then it's way deeper. It's down to instinct. It's down to like a felt sense. It's down on nervous system level. You have taught us a lot, but also from your podcast and other sources, that it's actually a felt sense, that it's one of the first senses we feel when we come out and get fed. And without food, we would not survive. And that causes reactions in our body that are instincts or that we can't control. That has really been the embodiment of the safety, has been my biggest learning of it and getting it way more into my own body.
I love that. And Charlotta, you and I had kind of a side conversation about the difference between instinct and intuition. And will you share that? Because I think that's really helpful for people to think about in terms of safety and how safety is cultivated by cultivating our intuition. But intuition is something that is, like when we hear intuitive eating, people I think are actually, what they're trying to get to is instinctual eating.
Yes. But, yeah. So can I 100%. Degree, because when we hear this, that the romance child, that the child just comes out and it's a natural thing that just knows everything and have intuition. I don't think we have intuitions as children. My opinion, I think it's more of instincts we do. And then we all learn intuition, because intuition, I think it's more learned than we have understood before, that it's things we're picking up and then we're putting it together. And it happens so quickly that later we almost think that intuition, it just happens, but our body is reacting so quickly to so many things that intuition takes practice and training. And at times, I don't think that the child picks from intuition. A lot of it is instinct. Yes. As well. So intuitive eating to me, I get it, but I also think that it takes a lot of practice. Intuition is not intuitive. So yeah, I think we learn to be intuitive.
Yeah, it's intuitive is based on patterns and learning. And
exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I love that you make that distinction of feeling safe in our instincts and really embodying that versus thinking we're wrong, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. We can't control the instincts, but we can be with them or not be afraid when they happen.
And can you say a little bit before we, and then I want to get to Mags, about the instincts that you're actually realize are important to honor versus
thinking that your instincts are, I just want food, or I just, whatever the instinct, whatever the thing you believed about yourself that made you feel unsafe about your instincts. Can you just talk a little bit about that difference?
I think a lot of the instincts have been the urge to be hungry, for example, like the instinct of the body telling me you're hungry. That has been something that's like in mine, it should be more controlled. I should be in control when I'm hungry. What the body is supposed to, the body's instinct is something that I ought to be able to control. So when it has arisen to me, sensations and instincts, I've been fearing that and thinking that it's something that, yeah, that it's almost like it's an outside thing. I didn't control it well enough and here it pops at me and I'm not sure if that makes sense or if that's really what you wanted, where you wanted to go.
No, it's a perfect example of hunger, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And still, you know, hunger to me is like, that's something that I think you can control. And to certain things, like, I think we can, we learn ourselves to do that. I don't think I'm born with a way of where I can control my hunger or the hunger sensations, I should say. But I think we can learn to turn our system off or not system off, but we can numb out and not feel when we're hungry or when we're satisfied.
Yeah. Well, and only for a little bit, right? And then it comes
yes.
back. And then we think, I'm out of control. And it's like, well, because you were too much in control before. So it's going to balance itself out. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mags, how about you?
Yeah. Well, actually, just to add to what you're saying, Charlotta, it's even when it comes to instincts, even not specifically about food and when you're hungry or not, it's, I was thinking of this yesterday, instincts, it's, even when you just when we're talking about the health industry or medically, like, or even diet culture, when you know, like, something in your instinct is telling you, like, something's not making sense here. So it's even more than, you know, I feel like it can even be in, when it comes to, for that angle too, it's like instinct is like a lot of people, you know, they sense something's wrong with all these experts and all the same advice that we keep hearing. But yeah, I just feel like that's a good point about the instincts, and it's bigger than just thinking of it in terms of, oh, my food today, what am I eating? Am I hungry? Am I out? It's like this whole, yeah, there's just so much more to it when it comes to instincts and diet culture and what a lot of people are feeling, even medically, where they feel, maybe I'm rambling on, but yeah, just feeling like it's a good word to pick when it comes to safety, because it, when you shut off that part of you, like the instinct part, I feel like the self-trust goes down, but really, like, it's because we're getting all these influences, it's affecting and clouding our judgment of things, and then you give that power away. So anyway, I just thought it was a good word to start with, for sure.
And I love your example of in the medical industry or even wellness industry, right? That's so true, Mags, is like, you know, you so many here times here, like, if it doesn't feel right with what your doctor tells you, yeah. But we're also trained to be good and that the doctor knows. And so it's so easy to override that instinct.
Exactly. And that was a big word that was coming up as I was thinking of all this. So it was a good word to start with. And yeah, and for me, in terms of food equals safety, well, I would say prior to Truce with Food, it was a very superficial understanding that I had of it, where it just kind of, you know, there's a lot of buzzwords in diet culture. So to me, I was like, yeah, I get it. I use food as a crutch. But when you actually peel back the layers and work through everything that led to you using food as a crutch and as safety, it's, my understanding is so much deeper, and it's not like a limiting, like, yes, okay, I know. And I just feel like I had more judgment towards like little statements like that, whereas now it's been replaced with more like self-compassion. So it's just like it broadened my whole understanding of really everything that's involved when it comes to us turning to food. And food is not the enemy. I don't see it as the enemy anymore.
I love that. And even talking about that broader understanding is, because we're going to be talking about values today. It's like, well, I value truth or freedom, but like, what does that actually mean, right? There can be so many different definitions. And I think part of increasing our sense of safety is being psychological safety specifically, is being able to be with more of that complexity, right? And more of that nuance, and that there isn't one way. So I love that you brought that up. I just think that's really important, because I think a lot of times we all think we get things. And it's like,
yeah. Even just having the language, like, it's like, just, yeah, there's just so much complexity and depth to all of this. And then we just make it about something like, oh, our weight, or oh, something superficial. So it's just, to me, it's like, wow, there are so many layers, and working through them is not easy. But it's just, yeah, I understand now why I turned to safety. And when we were going through our history and all the things that accumulated and that led to where we are, like, it makes so much sense. And it's like, how could I not turn to food? You know, so there's just more self-compassion when it comes to statements like that for me.
Wonderful. I love it. I have a gym buddy that we go to the same classes together, and she got off the pill and is doing family planning. And now she's like really into getting rid of endocrine disruptors in her cleaning supplies. And her boyfriend, he's in finance and he works in New York part-time, and he comes home and she's like, I got, you know, Allie recommended this new cleaner that's like not endocrine disruptor. And he's like, the only way to be healthy is to do keto and not eat sugar. And I was like, yeah. And I was like, he doesn't know. I was like, yeah, the only way to get rich is to cut coupons. Versus he works for like Goldman Sachs and spends his life researching about it. You know, it's like, okay, you have more depth of understanding in finance, but it just cracks me up how people think like they know, like in areas where they just don't, you know.
It's a very simplified formula for everything. It's like, oh, just do this. Yeah. And that's, exactly.
So I'd love for both of you to share why you did join Truce with Food, so people have a little context, and then we'll go into what story you were working on as a result.
So for me, it was like my last ditch effort to resolve a history of emotional eating and body image issues, because for a long time, it felt sort of like innocent, where I felt like I had control, because I was like, oh, okay, yes, I'm 30 pounds overweight, but I could fix this, you know, I could certainly fix this. But then when it's like, okay, I started having a few health issues here and there, and it started scaring me more. So I tried another program and it didn't quite, like, I kind of felt worse after it. And then when I heard about the Insatiable podcast, so there was one episode that I think I listened to it like 4 or 5 times. It was about trauma. And I was just like blown away that everything that I learned in one episode. And then I attended a workshop that you did. And I remember I was coming home from work. So I logged on a few minutes after. And then you were talking about history and about how women's bodies became currency, a form of currency, when men started owning land. And it just blew my mind. I'm like, am I in the right workshop here? Because it's like, I'm like, she's not going to tell me what to eat it and when, you know. It was just so different. And then I was thinking to myself, like, I've been feeling like this about myself all because of land. Like, it was just all these. So it was so different to me. So I thought, okay. And then I started with the weighting program. So why am I eating this now? And then it's just the material, it just spoke to me so much. And it's finally, like, when we were talking about that instinct thing, is I knew I'm not just like, it's not just me. I knew there were all these influences, but I just didn't have the language, the understanding. And I feel like so many people are in that position as well, where they're like, something's not right here, but let me just keep listening to these experts. I just keep saying the same things over and over again, but in different ways. So it was just so different, and it just spoke to me. So I was like, finally, I made the commitment, and I'm happy I did. So
I'm so laughing. I remember that workshop. It reminds me of the first module, like after we do the kickoff session in Truce with Food, where people are like, wait, how did I go from like, I need to eat more vegetables and cut back on sugar, to like, I'm afraid people are going to think I'm a disappointment. You know, it's like,
it's so like, as to our, you know, conversation, where it's so much more complex, because it's when we say root causes, like, that's like, you can't get more root cause than that when you're going back in history, you know? So it just shed light on so much of what never made sense to me, but finally I had language for it, you know?
Awesome. Thanks. Charlotta.
Yeah. It's been a long adult life struggling with weight up and down. But now afterwards, I just realized that it's even been an issue, more like a body issue, where it just hasn't been the weight that they started when I was very, very young. But the weight then has driven me to try to do certain things. And I've tried a lot of things, but it has not really worked. So, and I've done before then, I've also done like therapy and different courses, and most of them has been very brain-based. Finally, I just felt like I was in a corner, like banging my head. And I thought, I can't do anymore. Like, am I going to give up? Or what do I need to do here? And then, like, I believe that when we ask and are open and for receiving, it fell in my lap a little bit, more or less, with nervous system and somatic work. Kimberly Ann Johnson, that's also how I knew about you afterwards, but a few other sources. And that just, like, that was new to me. And I thought, it's got to be something there. And I think afterwards, my body knew, my mind, which is not the brain. Brain is different for me, for the mind. And you're talking about that with Stacy too. So I haven't finished that one. So I'm excited as heck about it. So because it's my brain couldn't go any further. So finally, I found something where the body then was mentioned, and where you did actually try to kind of connect with your body and be in your body. And I realized, like, holy crap, I am not even a tenth in my body to even feel things. So anyway, so that was really intriguing. And I could tell that this is something I want to get into more. And then you interviewed Kimberly Ann Johnson. So that's how I found you then. And I'm like, this is cool. She's bringing in the food aspect in this that Kimberly doesn't do at all. Or I haven't heard her do that much anyway. So, and then from then I found your podcast, listened to a few things, and I thought, and then of course there was in the fall, then last fall. So then you had a free workshop. I thought, I got to look into that, because I had some point there, I thought, I got to do something different. I got to get support. I cannot do this alone. It doesn't work. I've tried. I said I've been in groups, but I've just been trying it on my own, and I need support. I need guidance. And so I listened to that, and I was the same, almost like Margaret. You weren't talking too much about it then, but it was completely down to how society is, how completely different aspects of it. And I'm like, this is cool. It really fed my brain too. It's like, yes, exciting, new learning. Yeah. And the aspect of there is something else to this that I have not been taught, or that we don't know about, etc. So that's how I got into it. And I think part of it I knew, but also most of it was like, I think my being, it's just new. And then you have those call where you can call and just chat with you if this is okay. And that's one of the first time I've done it. And also because I feel safe enough for some reason to do it. And it was such an easy call with you. It wasn't a sale pitch at all. It was just truly, I could more or less interview you. You can see if I was a fit. And that just made me like, I knew already, but that was when I'm like, yep, I got to go for this.
Sure. Yeah. About that. I love one time you go, shit, I wanted something different. And this is really different.
Yeah. It is, because part of it is like, we're talking about safety in the body, nervous system. And you come in, you have done research. This is master and what all, I'm not very good with those terms, but you have studied this too. So you're coming in with a immunity to change. You have a concept. It's a good combination, and it attracts my mind and my body new. Like, okay, let's go for it. Your mind is intrigued. It thinks this is interesting. It's new. It's away from the mainstream. I like to be on the what's new or what is a little bit different. I like that. I've always done that. So that attracted me, and that you have the body, the safety, the down to earth, which I also has that I missed a lot. So it was the combination. It was just really cool how it all went.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
And the thing, I got to say this one thing though, I interrupt you, that it was also at the time I was talking, got some information and got talked to two nutritionists and dietitian, etc. And which was great. I never even taken that step, because even when I was suggested that, I said, hell no, don't even, I mean, my whole body's like, no, can't do it. But then I did, and it felt good. And also I'm saying, thank God I didn't do that. Nothing against those girls. I think they, because they were a little different, they were really into intuitive eatings, HAS, the health of every size and everything. But I'm so glad I choose what I did.
Yeah, because it's so much more than just food. And so, Charlotta, we'll start with you. What story were you kind of, did you discover that you were working on in Truce with Food that was causing this lack of safety and then spills over into how we eat, which then makes us feel we can't trust our appetite? I love that Mags talked about the self-trust if we can't trust our instincts. So what story were you working on?
This one is actually comical afterwards when I'm looking at it. And my first, because you ask us to kind of get a focus, you say goal, which had me freaked out, but then you said, no, it's more of a focus. So we have something to work through, which makes sense more when you get more into the process. I get it now. But anyway, so I had written down, I want to eat balanced, nutritious meal that makes me feel satisfied, or something like, now it's about cracking me up. What am I talking about? And then it was funny when I said this out loud on our first opening circle, you're like, and then she said, well, maybe we look at it a little bit different. You said something pleasure with food. And I thought my body just went hot, red. It went like, are you kidding me? And then part of me is like, well, she's kind of the authority. Oh yeah, I think she's right here. And then later, then when we got into it again, when we started the process and I had went in more with Laura, we got it actually down to this. I need have basic needs. Mm-hmm. That's how far it went down, that I actually have need to eat, sleep, and rest. So my cute little satisfying meal, it was about as far away from where I was at.
It was the tip of the iceberg.
Yes, to say the least. But I thought that sounded cute, or I thought that was what I was supposed to say. Now I'm like, yeah. Anyway, but then it also went a little further as we moved along. It come down to my core story is that I'm wrong. I'm born wrong came up first. That has lightened up a little bit till more I'm wrong. So that is my core story, I would say. Yeah, or not what I would say, but you helped me a lot through that. You're kind of like, oh, shoot, I'm wrong. And I can find that everywhere.
Yeah. And I love how we started with like pleasure and the goals that we do in Truce with Food are process oriented. They're not like outcome oriented, but you saying your instincts, right? Like if you can't have basic needs with your instincts met of like sleep, food, people think it's like, oh, it's about my needs needing to get met. But if you have a story of I'm wrong, then you're never going to get your needs met because the story tells you when you have instincts or needs that you're wrong. And so it's this vicious cycle. And so if you're someone who's listening and you're like, well, I can't not put myself first, or I always am beating myself up or whatever, there's a story that's generating all of these seemingly self-sabotage behaviors that are at the core. And we all have different ones. So thanks for sharing that, Charlotta.
I just got one thing I just want to add is that in my family, it was loudly outspoken that eating and sleeping are necessary evil. Yeah. I mean, so of course that's like, okay, I need to sleep and I got to eat, but that's wrong because that's necessary evil. Yeah. So, I mean, afterwards I'm like, okay, well, that makes me wrong because I have a need to sleep and eat. So that furthers then that I'm wrong. So yeah. I think that's an interesting, like necessary evil.
Well, yeah. I love that you talked about that because in one of the food is safety workshops, when we had this discussion about around discipline, it was like, no one explicitly in my family said be disciplined or this or that, but we have these phrases like sleep and eating are necessary evils. We use these phrases and all this implicit stuff that we just kind of absorb, right? Mm-hmm. Like the air that we breathe becomes basically this emotional software of stories. In episode 2, I talked about like this emotional elephant we're all riding on that we think are who we are versus what we picked up on without being told, without knowing we were picking up on it. So I think that's a great example of that. Yeah. Mags, how about you?
It actually, that's a perfect example of what Charlotta was saying when she said, do I say the answer I think I'm supposed to say? Or do I say, because my story was a lot about being seen in a negative light. And it's a lot around exceptionalism and perfectionism and just this fear of both ways. It was wrong. Whether I'm seen in a positive light, it's like, oh, great. Now I have to keep up. And when you have like imposter syndrome, and so it's like, oh, this is only temporary. But then if I'm seen in a negative light, that self-judgment is, it would touch on stories of worth. So it's kind of like, you know, what Charlotta is saying is like, oh, which version do I give? Which answer do I give? And accommodating and again, shutting off the authenticity of who you are and showing up authentically, because there's all these other influences telling you that you're supposed to be this way, or you should shrink, or you should, you know, so more specifically, it was for me, it was feeling safe, feeling healthy, and where that would lead, because I just didn't understand my behavior. It was so backwards. Like, I would want something in my heart, like truly want it and say that I want it, but I would do the exact opposite. And so I just couldn't understand how, just feeling like, okay, it just didn't make sense logically. Now I know it makes sense because I was protecting myself. It just seems like it's like simple to understand. But for me at that time, it was just going around in circles for decades. And I just couldn't understand why I was doing that. And it was always one of my big stress responses is avoidance. So I was trapped in that a lot. So it's basically like not wanting to be seen in a negative light and also sometimes a positive light. So that equals never trying and always hiding. So that was the main overarching theme, was like the perfectionism that's in the background, that's touching on all this worth, feelings of worth and stuff. So
I love that you shared the part about the risk in the positive light was, I have to keep this up, you know, even this belief that I have to keep this up. And if I have inadequacy that's driving the perfectionism, there is so much stress in it not happening, which is, it's like, I have all this stuff that I want, but there's so much risk in getting it, because then what else am I going to be expected to do? And I'm already tired. You know, it's like, I love that you brought that up, because I think most people don't think that they're afraid of success. And yet if you're in a story, you're going to be afraid on both ends, right? Because they both mean different pressure-filled expectations.
Yeah. And it was only recently that I realized that I am way more afraid of the success and the pressure that comes with that, or the success, how I used to define it, I guess I should say, versus failing. Cause I was thinking about this. I'm like, failing is actually kind of liberating, cause like no one has expectations of you. They're just like, oh, whatever, you know. But when it comes to feeling like let's say you do one thing well, and it's like, oh, what's next? Oh gosh, what's next? You know, it's just it's like we were saying in the community, it's like if someone gives you a compliment and says something nice, it's like, oh, that's great, you know, but what if the next day it's something different? So yeah, it's just always, you know, how we talked about in the community too, of how like the idea of owning and belonging to yourself. So that's something that I'm still working on. It doesn't happen overnight, but it's just for me, yeah, it was those two things that, whether it's positive or negative, it was a big charge for me. So I would avoid a lot. And I feel like, yeah, I'm starting to get to know myself more and what matters to me, which takes practice and time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's lead into, I love that you mentioned the perfectionism, because I think that's something I can tell you a lot of people listening can relate to. And so what values were running your life that kind of fed this story, right? We'll use food puns here. About what you thought you should be, needed to be, had to be in your story around needing to be perfect. Otherwise, you know, it was a catastrophe, basically. I mean, I'm putting words in your mouth, but this is a shorthand. What values? You said perfectionism.
It's everything that society and the big influences in my life told me I should value. So perfectionism, being exceptional, and it's for me, beauty was a huge thing, and the very narrow definition that society gives you, or let's say people in my community, or it's just big influences that it's everything that I'm told that I should value at the expense of everything else. So it's saying like anything that is results oriented or staying ahead of the game, or like it's just everything that I feel I'm being told this is what matters and this is how you stay ahead. And then you're successful if you have all of these things that check off these boxes. Whereas there's like so much more to your values that there could be so much more than just those very few specific things that you're being fed on the regular by your close circle or family. So yeah, for me, it was like, it's all the predictable stuff, you know, at least what I feel is predictable for a lot of people. It's like beauty, very narrow definition of beauty, and then perfectionism, and then just like this success, I guess, how it's defined out there versus me defining it on my own and what that looks like.
Yeah. And can you say, since we're on those values, and then we'll circle to Charlotta, how those values kept you stuck in your story? So it's like, we often think values are this great thing and we should align our lives by them, but often we haven't examined. I love that you said it's what society told me, right? And again, we all do this up until our early 20s. It's just how we develop. So this isn't like, again, that we're wrong or anything like this, but we think that there is the way versus a way, right? The answer versus an option, how we were socialized. And so can you say how these values, because on the surface, it's like perfectionism can be a badge of honor. Discipline is a badge of honor, right? It's like all this stuff, beauty, we'll get more into expanding that definition of beauty. It's not that these values were inherent, some of them are inherently bad, but how we're defining them, but how were these values of this is how I'm being good, but it's also keeping you stuck in your story and actually compromising your safety and sense that you could trust yourself.
Yes. So being someone who's, I would say, very spiritual, and I have a lot of depth where I don't just like the superficial stuff, it doesn't speak to me as much, you know? So it feels like back to what we're saying is like, I was cutting off a part of myself to be good, or what I was thinking means good. And I was tending to all these other things that I'm supposed to care about and to what degree I'm supposed to care about. Meanwhile, like, you know, what we're saying about instinct is like, there's something there that just doesn't feel right. Like there's all these other things that I could care about or could have cared about. And in turn, you know, you end up feeling like a failure because let's say, for example, you don't stick to the typical advice out there. That's like, you know, a lot of like brute force kind of discipline when it comes to diet culture, or you end up feeling like more of a failure. And of course, then I'm unsafe because I'm back in my story. I'm back feeling worthless. I'm back. So it's like this constant hamster on a wheel kind of thing going in circles. And it's the same cycle of, okay, I'm being good. I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do, but how come I'm still not measuring up here? Like I don't feel like I'm succeeding, or I'm failing. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do and then falling short. And then that keeps me in my story and then wanting to avoid and hide. So it was just like a constant loop. So it was because not even being aware of everything that's possible other than those very specific values.
Yeah. I love that you mentioned and called out discipline by brute force. Cause in the second food of safety gathering, I did just kind of a little history lesson that, you know, religion really, I mean, one of the original definitions of discipline was learning. It came from disciple, right? Like you learn, right? Versus brute force. But over the course of, and again, with this intro of this episode is all about, is like discipline has become about control. Not that discipline is inherently bad, but is it effective if we're only defining it by control when there's much of the world that we can't control? And I know in the food of safety gathering, so many people wrote to me afterwards of like, biggest aha, like I've been defining discipline as control and no wonder it's backfiring. So I just love that you use that. Thank you for sharing your life to bring home that point that happens to so many of us versus, yeah, we can still value being disciplined and we'll get to that. But like, there's other options of how to think about this other than brute force and overriding your instincts.
Yeah. And that's something as well. I only learned from you as well, what the actual meaning of discipline used to be and then what it became. So a lot of it is like, we're just picking up all this stuff and then running with it when it's like, do we even question things, you know? So yeah, it's just helpful, like I was saying, to sift through layers and just finally have some understanding of how we came to be. And yeah, it's worth looking deeper, I would say.
Yeah. Well, and I think about, I talked about this on an old podcast, but thinking about discipline, especially to align with your spiritual values of devotion, right? That to me is like the best version of discipline. It's like, I'm devoted to figuring this out. I'm devoted to my humanity, right? Like all of the things that I have to actually really encompass to have sustainable solutions. And then it feeds into this really true value of yours of spirituality, if it's about learning and all that kind of stuff. So yes, this is how it gets involved. So Charlotta, what about you? What values? So you have this story of I'm wrong, right?
Yeah.
And for people listening, you know, I'm wrong comes with shame, right? And shame comes with being outside.
Yeah.
So what values were running your story that you thought you needed to be, were good of how to be, to try to kind of, to be right would be your mind?
And I didn't grow up in the US. So I'm early 70s, or in the 70s, I should say, in a socialist country. which has my perspective is a little bit different from you guys, as I can tell at times, because it wasn't as driven, and also from my family, of course, which is more farmer background, real farmer, like out on the land. And also Sweden, well, all the Scandinavian countries are Lutheran, and church and state was one, like it, in Sweden, it didn't separate till 2000. In Norway, it's still state and church is one. So, wow. But anyway, so, but we are also, the Scandinavian countries are also the most secular in the world. So it's interesting. So anyway, so the socialist country were values. So it's a big mix in the sense of, especially with my background then, where agriculture, which means that you work, your body is just there to work and produce, to make, I mean, you got to make a living by physically be out working all the time. There's always something to do. The body was not for beauty, or so I'm coming from more where taking care of your body, that's a second deal. The body's just there to produce. So when it strikes me also that the other side of it, when people are talking like in the US, it's going to look pretty. You're going to spend, for me, that's vanity to do diets, to exercise. That's time you spend on yourself and not for the society or for your family also. And my family, it's a typical patriarchy system. This is this thing that when Mags talked about, all of a sudden, it goes back to women being currency. This is where blew my whole thing up with my values, that with when you're talking about the patriarchy and how I really started to understand that, like, oh my God, I'm as ingrained in that as you can ever be. I'm wrong because I was not born a man. So that went deeper for me. Then it's like, shoot, I'm trying to be a man because I grew up in those values, really hard values. And also my first couple of jobs were with man dominated workplaces, and it's much easier to be a man in this world. It's made for men. It's 100%. Not made for
men. Preach, I'm exactly. Coming to your church. Come to your church.
Yeah. But till you realize this now afterwards, like when your eyes are open, like, holy crap. But at times, you know, we swim in those waters, so you don't see the water. And then when you get to hear those perspective, all of a sudden, like, oh my God, my story is just like, my body is a machine. You do this and something comes out. Or rather, I mean, you spend no time on your body. And if you do, like, anyways, it's mind blowing looking back now. It's like, how did I survive? But yeah. I did, because I used the strategies of not, you know, trying to fit in. Discipline, extremely important. You do what the authorities say, like you have an authority in the family, but also in the society. The teacher is the authority. You do not say anything against the teacher. And also how we learned was like, you just learn it by heart, no questioning, no thinking. And yeah, the outside is, you know, you measure up, you get my views and my values were like, I had none of my own till I realized that I do have values. I just didn't know how they were hidden in there and how they have really kept me stuck in my story and formed my story.
Yeah, I love that. So for you, I love that you gave that different context, because we do have different people in different countries, right? And it is so different, like that idea, because Mags and I grew up in North America, right? Where it's like beauty is so focused. But in your upbringing, it was like, that's, why would you do that, right? You're not, that's time away from work. So I love that you bring out that nuance and stuff, right?
Back then anyway, it sure is turned around.
Yeah.
Well, now, but it was different then, because it was also hippie around here, like more natural. It in more secular, like I said. So the body isn't just something awful that you have to hide. And when I grew up here, it's quite common. The body was okay to be shown naked. Kids don't have to be covered up. They can be kids. It was a big aha when I come to the US. It is different. And whoa, they're even dressed, making sure that we can't even see naked kids naturally running around. So the body there, like the pure, you know, the Puritans, that it get much more. Yeah, it got very obvious to me that the body is much more of a. It was different from how I grew up, in the sense that the body wasn't so special for the. It was special for what it could produce, not for just what it was being.
Yeah. Well, and I also think about with the kids and stuff. I mean, part of the puritanical thing was like sexuality, right? Like repressing sexuality. Mm-hmm. So it's like, seeing people around naked, it's like, if we're not hyper, when you suppress hypersexuality, then the culture rebounds. The same way when we restrict, we then binge. If you restrict it, then the society becomes hypersexual in these weird ways. And so you don't, in Sweden, which is one of the most feminist countries we have, it's like, we're just not sexualizing, right? Like, we're not making sex bad or good. It just, so why can't we have more nudity, right? It's like that neutral. Mm-hmm. So I love that example. Yeah. So you had these values of basically like production, the bodies for production, work, and a lot of the patriarchal values around authoritarian, hierarchy, all that kind of stuff. So, and how do you think those were keeping you stuck in your story, especially if you have this core story of, I'm not a man, I'm wrong. How do you think that was keeping you stuck in that story?
Well, how can you be right if you're a woman and not, I mean, if you're not a man? I mean, you're just like, okay, I can't really change that. I guess I could, but not then anyway. There was not, you wouldn't, it was, yeah, I'm not going to go there, but you keep in the loop of like, and also what really happened is that I seen the feminine as very, very weak mm-hmm. and not valued. And that's also where I was quite sensitive and really was interested in. Now I know it's like more into spirituality, where that was not in my family. We never went to church, no religion, though religion and spirituality doesn't mean the same. But I was drawn to it, but I couldn't get any outlet for it, and which I also think is much more of my feminine side. And I don't say this against masculine, but I have a lot of toxic masculinity that I was driving me and that I valued. And then I'm like looking at those values, really, they kept me away from not the soft. Well, for me, feminine is softer, and it's not that men can't be soft. It has nothing to do with that. It's masculine and feminine. It's not about men and women. But I didn't trust myself. I couldn't trust my body. Here I am getting a period. You know, you can't be productive if you have a period, actually. You know, you get days out of the month where I can't do certain things. And also taking those needs that I'm not quite sure where I'm going with this, but
no, I think it's a great example. I mean, having a period, if all your value, and what's tricky about values is, right, some are centered, some aren't, right? But if the top value is working, and then you have a period where you just don't have the same strength all 4 weeks of the month, then you feel wrong for that, rather than why is it even set up like this?
Yes. And also, like, there isn't room, like, for me anyway, it was just really kept me stuck in like not being who I am. Of course, if I think we all have that, like we can't follow. I would compare, like, since I was with men, I'm not as strong enough as them, but I got to fight. I got to try. I got to do this. I was striving for something that, I don't say that women can't be strong, for goodness gracious, it's not about that, but I was reaching for things that I had to prove myself, and no one told me that. That was not that people would, oh, you got to do that even if you're a woman. It was my way of like, I got to try to do this. I got to push myself. But my body has other needs as a woman. I didn't get it. It took me 50 years to get there.
Well, and the other thing that strikes me is what you were saying, and I love, of course, we're talking about the archetypes of feminine and masculine, and I did an episode a couple years ago on that. You could Google that, but we also talked about it in episode 4 with Syl Reynolds about archetypally. If you're a yogi, it's the yin and the yang, or in traditional Chinese medicine, feminine is yin, you know, masculine is yang. But what you were saying, I loved, Charlotta, is that, like you said, the feminine is more soft, and there's strength in softness, but we're taught that to be strong is just the purely toxic masculinity version of strong. So if you're someone who wants to be strong, that's a value I have, but understanding that there's a lot of ways to define that, right? Is something that I hear, especially when we get to the next question about spirituality even, right? You know, that definition has gone under radical revision for you, but I think that's what you were saying, right? Is like, there's this, I think the only way to be strong is to try to just be more and more of this one version of strong, which is overriding all my instincts, right? For sleep, food, that those are necessary evils. So just get them over with. Not expanding that strength can also be softness of tuning in.
Yeah.
Did I say that correctly? I mean, I don't want to.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Wonderful. I think softness is about, I mean, to me, since that's the hardest thing to do, that takes some serious strength. they take some serious guts and courage. So softness to me is beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we're going to take a short break and then we're going to get back into your new values.
Ellie here.
Popping in to let you know if you're enjoying this season's food as safety theme and feel in a place you want to take action, which is where transformative results unfold. Come join me and other intrepid health rebels who hate small talk for my free food as safety gathering series. In this series, I'll share practical application tools for your own stress eating and workshop a few participants' stress eating challenges, and we'll continue the conversation that these episodes have sparked. The next gathering, which is on a Zoom call, is on Wednesday, January 4th, 2023. We've already had two gatherings. When you sign up for the January call, you can access the past gatherings. The feedback has been amazing, as usual, on these calls. If you really want 2023 to be different for you in terms of food and really the way that you feel your body has held you back, I suggest checking them out at alishapiro.com/food as safety. The link is also in the podcast show notes wherever you listen to your podcast. And again, these gatherings are free. They're casual, come as you are, and so nourishing. I wish I could read all of the feedback I've gotten from these. Really, they're so good. But in part because of the conversations we've had from those who have joined. Even showering is optional. These gatherings answer the where do I start to have a truce with food? And are designed for those of you feeling the call or curious about truce with food to know where to start. Truce with Food 2023, my signature boutique group program, opens for registration on January 9th, and there's an early bird special to save $500 that runs from January 9th through the 16th. I'll also be offering a workshop on January 11th about the research that shows how SMART goals don't work for eating and exercise goals and what to do instead. And I'll also be hosting a Truce with Food alumni open house so you can hear from past participants about their experience and where they are now. If you join our food as safety gatherings, you'll receive all this information to sign up for all this free stuff. You can also join my list at alishapiro.com to receive invites to all the fun stuff going on in January. Truce with Food opens once a year. If you feel called to this adventure of a lifetime, I hope you'll join us. Okay, now back to our episode. So when we took our short break, we were talking about the values that we had and redefining them here and there, which we've hinted at. So I was wondering if, Mags, you can tell us through the Truce with Food process, what values fell by the wayside and which ones were redefined and which new ones arose to help you really get out of this hustling for perfectionism and then feeling like everything else less than perfect was you had to avoid and hide and shrink yourself.
Yes. I feel like this answer could be like 45 minutes long. So I'll try. Okay.
I love it. We're radicalizing everybody.
There's just so much. Okay. So when it comes to anything that was before, like the teachings in diet culture, so all of that, it actually repels me right now. Like it's just, I just, it didn't really speak to me before, but I was trying to be good. So I would follow those things. So anything that's like the rigid plans, the external authorities dictating what I'm supposed to be doing with my body and overriding my instincts and all of that. And it's not to say that you can't learn things and you can't take things away from what's out there, but it's just the predictable, same recycled stuff for me. It's like, no, it doesn't speak to me and I don't even pay attention to it anymore. That's one of the things that fell. When it comes to redefined, so as you know, I've had like a long entanglement with beauty. And so redefining that has been interesting. And so I'm kind of enjoying that. But even with things like when it comes to superficial stuff like makeup and stuff, I was like the other day we went out, I was looking at like there's so many tutorials out there and I'm so behind, you know, on what I used to care about. And so I realized as an example that, okay, I can have like a basic or a little bit more than basic knowledge of how to apply. And I, okay, as long as I look good, I feel like I look good. Like I don't need to know every single product. And whereas like the old me was like, I would have felt like a little bit behind and a little bit. So to me, it's like, there's only so much time, energy to care about certain things. So it's like, how do I'm still tweaking, you know, like how to redefine beauty. It's not even just the makeup. It's like, what makes me feel beautiful? Like not rushing, like not things that came up where I was like, oh, I never thought of it that way. So that's one of the things. So, and also of course,
wait, I want to stop you there. Cause I think this is an important one that a lot of people in the listening can understand that beauty. And do you remember the conversation we had where you're like, oh, you mean I don't have to just like pretend to say that I feel beautiful when I don't? And like, I was like, no, that's not what I'm talking about. But can you talk about that kind of embodiment of beauty versus just looking at a picture of ourselves, but the actual felt sense, kind of what Charlotta was saying, when we actually bring the body into change? And can you talk a little bit more about slowing down or surrounding, because beauty isn't just what we look like, but yet how we feel in our body can determine how we experience beauty. So I just want to like slow down right there.
Yes. Okay. So before I, like when it comes to like cliche stuff, it was like, okay, you know, get a manicure, blah, blah, blah. So it just was like, I'm like, to me, it didn't make sense. But when we broke it down and we were like, okay, for example, feeling like being in nature makes me feel beautiful. For me, I realized like rushing a lot is I don't feel good when I just roll out of bed. And then I'm next thing you know, I'm out somewhere. Like, so I realized like, okay, so taking my time with things makes me feel beautiful. Even if it is something like now we're just on a podcast, but I put a bit of concealer on because I'm like, it makes me feel more awake. So it's just finding different ways where like you said, you're embodying it. And it's not just a picture on your fridge or something. It's actually feeling, I guess it's about feeling good and feeling empowered. And so
doing it for yourself. Like, that's what I hear. We are not on video, but you're like, I feel more awake if I have concealer or foundation. I forget what you said.
Yeah.
Concealer. That like actually including yourself versus just objectifying yourself.
Yes, exactly. And so, yeah, it doesn't have to be so like even now working from home, I always thought, oh, you know, I'm putting on makeup, I'm doing it for myself. But then when I work from home, I would never wear makeup. But now it's kind of like I'm just tweaking a few things where it's like, okay, like what feels beautiful to me. So yeah, it's like, it could be as simple as like when we're talking about makeup, but it could be, it's so broad, the definition. And that's why it's taking me time to see, okay, what makes me feel. And even with brand names, for example, like, do I care about trends? Maybe I can care a bit, but not to the extent where I'm going to spend like a crazy amount on a purse that is, you know, so it's just like, for me, it's been constantly these little tweaks. And it doesn't have to be all in the non-superficial, and it doesn't have to be all in the superficial. So it's kind of like this spectrum where it's okay, what feels good? And this is kind of like we were something I printed the other day from the program. It's like, it's not technical problems, not technical answers. It's you figuring it out as you go and accumulating your own data to be like, okay, this, I feel my best when, and then it could be, you know, any of those examples. Being in nature could be for one person, you know, looking good and having just really basic makeup could be for someone else. So it's just like, it just, my definition of it just blew wide open where I'm not just fixated on my weight and this one part of myself where it's just so much more now. So that's definitely something that I'm still in the process of redefining, and it's just been feeling good, you know. And yeah, and also tied to that is like progress and success have been redefined because I'm not using the same benchmarks of, I'm not measuring it the same way that I did. So it just ties in as well, where it's like, there are so many more markers that we can look at instead of just very superficial end result of things, where there could be so much more than just like what's in front of you.
Yeah. And I just want to say, do you remember you shared in the community once about how to speak to this, how you're really embodying this is like, someone saw you and they noticed that you had like lost weight, or they said that you did. And you were like, look, it still feels nice, but it's not the main thing. And you were talking about perfectionism, right? And it's like, for a lot of people, if they start to lose weight, if they're, even if it's, again, it's that success, but if it's driven by this shame-based, if I gain weight or if I don't lose weight, other people are going to judge me versus I'm making more of these other changes that are fulfilling me. And it's actually for me, like you were like, it was great, but I know so many people are like, once I start losing weight, then I tell myself I can treat myself more. And then I'm that little bit of slack. I can't give myself that slack. The issue isn't the slack. It's that you losing weight is filling into this story of how you're being good and perfect. And that feels like a hustle versus the more that you're self-expressed and showing up with what's fulfilling for you, the less that perfectionism. I hear you talking about that in the nuance of like, well, maybe it's about a bag, maybe it's about makeup, but it's all these other things. Because the value of perfectionism, being self-expressed and in choice, as we say in Truth with Food, and following your instincts, is you're just learning to value that more than the perfectionism. But I just want to talk, I know that I'm kind of on at my own tangent now, but that progress and success, I just wanted to give that example for people because
it felt like a bonus. It was just a bonus. It was like, oh, yes, really? I think I have, everything says that I have lost weight, but anyway, let me go on with my day. Whereas before I would be on a high and I haven't even weighed myself yet because I'm not even that curious to know. And it's not even because I'm avoiding. It's just a very neutral fact that, you know, it still feels good. And like I was talking to Charlotte earlier this morning, I was like, there's still a goal of wanting to get healthier and lose weight. There's so much more to health than just that. It's just one of the things. It's not the leading thing, like you were saying. So it just feels good to not center it on that, on a number or on exactly how I look. Or, you know, it's such a bonus, but it's not the main thing. And yeah, it's.
Yeah. Well, and I love this conversation because we talk a lot about like, not a lot so much in Truth with Food, but like navigating wanting to lose weight. And I think it's, you know, when it's shame-based motivation, that which is what most of us are driven by, yeah. Versus it doesn't mean this is nuanced of like, I still can want to lose weight, but how I understand how I have to go about it is different. And I also understand that it can't be the main driver because that just feeds into, even though our stories often aren't about food, they also do play out in food in our body. So it's like, this cannot be the only thing because then that's just feeding into, I've got to be hustling, right? Because we put so much stock on our weight as whether or not we're worthy versus no, what makes me feel worthy and whole is self-expressing these values that are actually important to me. So I just want to bring that up because weight is like, obviously people who listen to this are like thinking about weight loss often. I think your example brings up so much of the nuance of it.
Yeah. And I think without, like, even if you're someone who you consider yourself being knowledgeable and like, it's something that how would you, it's so on such a subconscious level, all that's going on where it's kind of until you actually connect, make certain connections and have that insight, it's like, you're just kind of operating, not even realizing it's like a status quo that you're doing all these things that you didn't realize you are. So it's just helpful to go through the layers and have that support. So.
Yeah. I love that. What about you, Charlotta?
Well, my biggest thing is actually the masculine to the feminine. Mm. And I am very happy of the masculine qualities that I have when they're in the balanced masculine, when I'm in that sense, I'm really happy about that. But also it's been the feminine has been a struggle. There's been something that I've seen as like, you know, weak and not enough. And but also I'm so happy that I can. Now, the biggest part is like the feminine is just intriguing. It's cool. It's different. So that attracts my like rebellion tears. Like, oh, let's get into something else. How can I go? For a while, I'm like, when you're getting all this information, you almost get, man, I hate everything about the masculine. And I don't, because it has so much greatness in it. And also, so the feminine aspects is like, it just grew clearer to me what it is. Nature for me is masculine and feminine. So nature is really important to me, has been, but I see the shift in that, like that's a value to me. We have the, you know, we need the fresh air, we need the sun, we need the water. It produces food and everything. So, but nature to me has gotten a deeper for me now. It's more like the actual roots. Like I want to get into the roots. I want to get into my roots and where are they? And that has naturally led me into my femininity, my maternal line, it might like that I have not neglected, but I have not been connected to it at all because it hasn't been valued or valued in anything. So that has been absolutely amazing. And just feel that like the support and the trust. So the female values of like receiving or just being slow down. I don't have to hustle. I don't, because the masculine in me where I came from before is like, you control the damn nature. That's something that's controllable. You decide the seasons more or less with how society is changing. How can we extend the seasons longer? How can we produce more? Da, 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 da. And that's been, now I'm like, I'm looking at how is nature working? When is it time to plant a seed? When is this the right place on earth to even plant a seed? Maybe this is where we need to just have open prairie. Comes close to my heart since I'm living in Montana now with a cattle ranch. And is this sustainable, what we're doing? Can we listen and really be more in tune with what nature shows us? And that's then down to me then. Can I feel my own nature? Can I feel how I work? Is there certain times of the day when I feel better, that I have more energy? Is there certain times that I need the rest? Can I tune into that? And that's to really value my body. It's that's the change that it has so much, getting emotional. But this is... it has the knowledge. If I can listen, if I can feel him, he'll tell me. Just the acknowledgement of that, that I have not been able to hear it because it hasn't been valued. And it makes sense now. It's not me being wrong that I haven't been able to feel my body. It has not been supported. I haven't had any guidance. It just hasn't been the value for other people either. So I'm excited about it. It's hard, but I'm excited about it. And I just really, that's the biggest change. Is about that it's dwelling into the feminine.
That is so beautiful. And Charlotte, I don't know, this could be its own podcast in and of itself, but what about how you view spirituality and where God exists now? It's shifted as a result of some of this.
Yeah. Never been religious, haven't fit in, been wanting to, looking for something, and then it's Lutheran, and in the area where I grew up is very, very conservative Lutheran too, almost into Catholicism, which means that the body is a sin. You hide it. You don't go there. So I think the conspiracy here is that, of course, they've done that because they don't want us to find God or the goddess, the mother. And because I believe that the goddess is in the body. And that would be the last place we would dare to look for, because that's where sin is. So, yeah. Because also, I mean, if it's that simple, we all have our own body, that would mean that we would have our own authority. We would be, and that would crumble the whole society structure.
Well, and do you remember us chatting about how when you were younger, though, now that you can look back, you were seeking this spiritual connection. This is something, this has been a longing.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. So I love how this is talking, like, because I think sometimes we do have these values that are part of who we are, but again, how societies define them. And now coming into, you're finding God, right? Like,
yeah. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
I
can say God now without getting the shivers about it. Because God was a masculine outside thing, an authority, like I said, you know, like our fathers, our teachers, and all that was God. He was on the top, so he damn sure would have the whip to crack down when it. And God now is like, holy crap, God is awesome. Goddess is inside me, and we're pretty damn awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I decide what God is. I decide what goddess is.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
This is deep work. When we say we go to the root, we're going to
the goddess. Yeah. And exactly. And then also, like, looking at my roots wasn't like, oh, I gotta dig in, you know, analyze them. Well, I guess haha pun, you dig in. But it was more like following the roots, not for me to drag them up. It was following them down, that I'm not gonna be controlling them. It rip it up and see what's down on the root, because my inner protectors, they know that I can rip things in pieces and be a little bit fast and forward. So it's been interesting to just follow where I'm going and not have so much of an agenda and not being so rushed and doing it fast. That's the big part.
Yeah. Well, and that's valuing that receiving, right? Valuing it's emerging from the feminine. And also, I just love to... your example of slowing down, it then enables you to honor, I think what you were describing is the cycles of nature, the cycles
yes.
of ourselves. And so it's just crazy how certain values will then just totally reorient, like, what we see in the world, to your point of like, oh my God, are we trying to overproduce the land? Like, what is the real cycle here versus what's been manufactured? So I love that example, because slowing down is something that has like Mags, I'm still tweaking on the slowing down, and it's always a work in progress because you learn more layers, but I cannot believe how I view things so much differently now that I'm really valued slowing down. Well, Charlotte, we'll pick up with you and then we're going to pretty much wrap up here. What's different today in your story based on self-authoring your values versus the default normal? And you kind of alluded to this in this question, but let me ask the question again. I kind of jumped. I did not slow down there. Work in progress. What's different today in your story based on self-authoring your values versus the default, quote, normal values that guide our culture? What do you think is different in your sense of wrongness? And what is, even if there is a sense of wrongness? Versus-
yeah, well, no, heck, yes, it blooms up every day. I had a case of I'm wrong right before we did the podcast that, oh, I'm not going to do it right. And then I was like, what is right here, Charlotta? It's like, so I'm, yeah, so it catches all the time. But the thing is, just like I said, now it's my relation to being wrong or to my story, the relationship, like, okay, here we go. And I can be way more compassionate with it. I catch it sooner. But, and also there is many, many, many examples where I don't see myself as wrong anymore, or not see myself as wrong, but because that hasn't really been, you know, it's been subconscious that I'm wrong. But anyway, it's like the difference is that I feel more connected, because the feminine is, it's connection, it's receiving. And that is a huge thing for me, that where I'm coming from, like, you got to do it, you got to be disciplined, you got to do it right, you got to do it alone. If you use support, then you didn't really do it. And now it's like, the more I trust myself and can feel, it's like I have agency. That's the thing that I was new to me, whether you've been talking about, you know, self-authoring, the, like my agency, my own agency, it's been really been ingrained in that, that I trust myself enough to reach out for support. I do not know everything. If I did, I wouldn't be where I am. I wouldn't have struggled with food and weight. That's just not the only thing. But if we're talking about that here, I would not have that. I would have been finding that safety much sooner if I could figure it out alone. So it's been huge with the group here. I feel more confident reaching out because I decide what I'm picking. I'm going out to shop. If I'm looking for a doctor or someone, I do the choosing. I'm just not taking what's available for me, which also means that I'm like realizing I can't do this alone. And I got people in the world that really has my back. And I got two right here close to me. And I got my own back. And I also know that I'm not sharing and asking for help any, just rambling like randomly. I know to be careful too, because not everyone can hold this and can be as the support that I need. And the more I know what I need and what my values are, it's easier for me to kind of feel my way around to. And that's when my intuition can be helpful, because it has been through a lot. So then my intuition has grown now enough where it's quite quicker. I can catch like, nah, this is not a fit. And much sooner, it's like, this will work. I have support here. So that's been a big thing, to be included, to not making myself wrong, to put me on the outside that I'm wrong, I can never fit in. So
I love it. I love it. It's so big. Also, what about, because one of, and again, you don't have to share if you don't want, but what about one of the big things of, because now you don't feel wrong, you can almost admit to yourself that some of your mental health stuff has been hard. Like,
yes. Yeah. Heaven's sake. We're supposed to be open, you know, mental health anymore. It's okay. Everyone talks about it. Baloney. And it shows a lot here just a couple of days ago when we lost Twitch. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I think it means to me that we lost him. We lost him. The world lost him, because we haven't been doing what we ought to do to help people enough. So anyway, I don't know how long, but I've been diagnosed bipolar, mostly more on the depression side, and it's been more okay, but it is a lot of shame, whether or not we say that it's more accepted, it's not, because it's not, doesn't fit in. It makes us needing to take other measures, then it's harder. But that I had a breakthrough that it's been really hard for me, and it is hard when it hits. And yeah, it's been struggle at many times, just the acknowledgement to say it out loud. Ali let me say that out loud, and even to think it and admit and struggle. We want to be, this society doesn't like when we struggle and take up room or don't produce. So it's been hard, but I don't say that depression, and I can't even say that it is, because I'm right in the middle of really riding it now, of feeling in and just not making it wrong about me. But it's liberating in the sense that, how do I relate to this? Is depression making me wrong? No, not so much anymore. And then I had a little case of hypomania here a while back, and that was awesome, because I hadn't had it for a while, to ride that too. That's when I realized how much shame it had been in that. I thought it was all my shame was in depression. But depression is easy almost then, because you hide and you isolate, like the void, where if you go into the void pattern in our, like in our stress, how we cope with it, like then you can avoid. But when you get more into hypomania, then you're out visible. How to relate to that? That, oops, this is a side of me that's, I'm excited. Now I know when I'm feeling fairly good, but it is exciting and it's freaking hard. And then comes the comparison to that, oh, people have it much worse. Thank God I don't have that. And it's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah. I think that's so important, because if we have this story of I'm wrong, then often we hide these things from ourselves. Like it can't, yeah. You know, if I admit it's hard, it's because it's me versus it's hard to deal with. And I love that you brought in that, yeah, as a culture, we're trying to destigmatize it, but it's not trickling down enough to really, I think, yet. Like people say, well, here's a hotline. Well, if you're depressed and suicidal, you don't have the energy to call a hotline. I mean, I get that people, and I also don't want to, that has helped a lot of people. It's not all
around. Yeah.
But we
Because that's been I shouldn't say, but that advice is great. And it's been detrimental at times too, to when you're at rock bottom and you have a friend telling you, here is an 800 number. That is pretty tough. that's the least thing you'll do if you're severely depressed. So, yeah. But it has helped a lot of people. Absolutely. So, but it's a both, and I don't think it's enough.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think, I mean, does it feel like relief being able to admit that it's hard? I think that's like,
yes. That has changed. That's why this is so new, because this was just a month and a half, Ali, when I said that out loud?
Yeah.
To myself, that, so it's new to me and it opens up the other side. Then I see people with so much more compassion too. It's like, that's a struggle. It's not a competition. Of course, certain things are, I still do think it's more awful than other things, but I can see that it's hard for them. I mean, and I can see how we don't make it, we're afraid to say that it's hard. People have losing their husband, et cetera, but it's okay. I'm like, that's not okay. It's freaking hard. Let's stay with that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And then you get to more like people, I want to give them time, because that's what I haven't given my time. So that makes it like, I want to give other people time. Stay with this. This is hard. This is how we connect. This is how we get to be human again.
I love that you brought that up, is like, the more we are with our own difficulty, it's not selfish. It's not taking away. It actually just gives you more compassion for other people and know how to better support them. Like you said, give them time. Mm-hmm. Actually lean into it and tell them it's hard versus, well, at least this, you know, it's like, oh.
Yeah. Yesterday I was really nervous. I reached out to Mags and Ali and said, I'm nervous. Plus I had a little bit of a jet lag deal where I thought I was so, but I just reached out and said that. And the standard answer, or the easy answer, would have been get back. Oh, you'll be fine, Charlotta. You're great. And I had said out, I want someone to tell me, I got your back. We got it. And that's exactly what I got back from Ali and Mags. Like, we got you. We got this. Just to hear, it's hard to hold things. So it's easier. And I can see that not everyone can. So it's easy to say, oh, it's okay. You'll be fine. And other people have the same. But what we really need is just to have someone said, yeah, this is fucking hard. I got your back.
Yeah.
Well, and hear the we, because I never heard the we, like it's always been, oh, you can do it. So hear someone say, oh, we can do it. We got you. I was like, whoa, changes everything.
And that's totally in line with the feminine, which is just about witnessing, you know, like, yeah, it's hard. And you have to witness it for ourselves first before we can kind of bring it out into other things, to other people, and who's safe. I love that you said too, it's like discerning who you can share it with or not versus thinking everyone can hold it.
It's such an important conversation. And even when we're talking about, you know, with what happened to Twitch and everyone saying like, yeah, check in on people. But then I was thinking, but some often when you check in, people are like, oh yeah, I'm fine. The very people that they're not going to open up either. So I think it's, we're just because of the way that our culture is, sometimes it's like, we don't even know what it looks like to truly check in. And I think that's kind of,
whoa, girl. Sorry, you hit the nail. Say that again, please. Amen.
I forgot what I just said.
But no, we don't even know how to check in on how.
Yeah,
to check
like
in
I think people are well-meaning, but we've been all socialized in similar ways where it's kind of like, when I was thinking about it, there are a lot of times I ask people, hey, hi, how are you doing? And oh yeah, I'm good. Are you sure? Because you know, and so it's kind of like also not knowing how to do that. And when you're both talking about holding and sitting with it is so important. But I think even though people are caring and they're well-intentioned, it's like on both sides, like we might not know how to do that, you know? So
that's 100%. It's a great point. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I also think about too, part of why it's so hard is like, if we look in the health and wellness space, right? Everything should be able to be cured if you know a functional medicine protocol. You know what I mean? Do you know what I mean? So it's, and again, we've made since COVID, since this stuff, we've made health such a moral issue that then it adds this layer of shame. So then people want to say they're fine because they've internalized this story of, you know, it's me versus, look, functional medicine is great and it doesn't work for everybody. It just doesn't. It is not as great and it's not the whole story. I mean, God knows functional medicine, that systems approach worked really well for me, but then I couldn't keep it up. Right. So it's like, okay, that was like one small piece of this bigger puzzle. But I think you bring up a really great point, Mags, about just us not knowing how to check in on people and what are the signs. And then if we can't be with our own discomfort, then we just want to fix it for other people, right? Which is like, well, at least it's not this, or, you know, because we can't be with our own discomfort. So there's like so much complexity there.
It's unintentionally dismissive and we just cover it up with buzzwords, but we don't mean to, but it's just, yeah, I think it's just as a whole, like we don't have the skills yet and don't know what it looks like to really support someone and get the right, get to the right answers of like how a person, what they're really struggling with. So,
yeah. And if we can be, I mean, I love that you said, I think if we can have these kind of conversations we're having now, right. Where it's just like, oh shit, I've done that in the past. I've told people just to think positive this is what comes up for me, right? Then we could get there, but we have to have the capacity to even like be real with each other, I guess, to have these kind of conversations that I don't know, maybe they're happening more and more. I'm not sure. But Mags, what about you? But thank you both for that. I think we just had a really important discussion in this value of authenticity. Authenticity is changing, right? It's a dynamic nature of what's real for us. But I think it's one that kind of how you were saying, Charlotte, like, oh, everyone says this is destigmatized or let's celebrate authenticity. But then often when you come with it, it's often people, we don't know how to handle it effectively. So,
yeah.
So yeah, Mags, what about you? Oh, and Charlotte, did you have anything more to say before we go to Mags?
No, just that I think she's awesome. The thing you said, we don't know how to check in. I think that was one of the biggest thing on this podcast that I just going to keep with my heart.
it's an important part of the conversation because it's not just on the person. It's like, how do we do that? How do we even do that? And what does that look like? And yeah, so that's definitely one of the values that I always held was authenticity, but it's getting there with all in this kind of society and how we say the waters that we're swimming in. It's like, it's hard to show up authentically when you have everything else going on. But for me, just so much pressure was removed in my story and these harsh self-judgments that were affecting my mental health for a long time when I finally understood that, you know, self-sabotage is self-protection. And so just so much, it almost feels like it evaporated, this heaviness and this, I feel like I've healed a lot. And so now the things that I value are almost like things that are unseen to the eye, like nuance that we always talk about, discernment. And a huge one is the self-advocacy that could actually save your life, because you are asking questions. If something doesn't feel right, let's say with a specialist or a doctor, it's like, no, don't just take that as your answer. It's like, you have the right to change doctors. You have the right to ask for more if something doesn't feel right, and that could save your life. So it's all these things, this insight that helped where I value so much more, and it's stuff that you can't necessarily see. And I think that's what we skip over when it comes to a lot of things in society, is like, oh, we value results. We value what we can see, what's tangible. But what about all this other stuff that's almost like spiritual? We're just dismissing all of that for these things that are on the surface. And doesn't mean any one of them is necessarily bad, but look in all the value of all the, everything that I've gained when it comes to values, is like the self-trust is there. The confidence is there. It's just such a day and night kind of thing when you actually start to have those insights and understand, like, okay, I don't know. It's just, for me, like the whole program is almost permission to be yourself. And then that leads to safety, and that leads to self-trust, and that leads to just, you know, just like we say, embodying beauty, it's like embodying safety, because now I can put myself in situations that I couldn't a year ago. So yeah.
And what about, like, I think one tangible thing is you talked about perfectionism, and you have a business that you're building on the side of your job, mm-hmm. and it really fulfills you. And can you talk about how before it was kind of like all or nothing, and now you're realizing how much, again, that progress and success is being redefined differently, and you're finding so much fulfillment and like the sustainability of that. So you keep showing up by working on it a little bit at a time, versus, because boredom eating, like eating at work out of boredom, was a big thing for you. And part of that, we got to that story, you know, around feeling like you need to have more purpose and stuff like that. So can you talk about how that, working on it a little bit at a time and like letting go of perfectionism and really tuning into that embodied soul and creativity with that, has shifted things?
Yeah, it's something that happened sort of gradually. I was just like, okay, you know what? Like, let me just, even if it's 10 minutes, I just started building a bit of consistency, and then started realizing, wow, at the end, those 10 minutes or 15 minutes a day add up, and then you're somewhere completely different in like a month. Whereas before, I would be like, oh, I'm going to devote my whole weekend to this, and my whole day is going to go towards this. It was like these grandiose efforts where it's like, yes, like I'm going to relaunch, I'm going to do a professional photo shoot, go big or go home. It was like, it's these romantic ideas of what it's supposed to look like. Whereas when I just, okay, let me just upload a product, and, or let me just post something small. And then I was like, you know what? I started appreciating that kind of space that I'm giving myself. And I just kind of started to honor my process more. So it just feels more authentic, even like that, because I'm not doing it. Nothing else is telling me like, oh no, I need to be a certain place. If you really want to be a business, you have to do this. You have to, you know, it's kind of like, I'm going at a pace that I feel comfortable with. And I just feel like it makes all the difference to even show up a little bit. And then you know, bit by bit, you start feeling like, oh, okay, that was like, that's not so bad. And then, you know, so it's just like, it starts to change when you just, it's slow and subtle, and you don't realize while it's happening. At least I didn't. But when I look at the differences, like before, I wouldn't even commit to even like an hour unless I can do like, let's say 2-3 hours. So it's just a night, I mean, like working on that. So I just feel like it's like there was no appreciation before for that slow and subtle change, because it was all like, I want those radical results, you know, because that's what counts. Now it's because I can value everything else so much more. I just feel like, oh, it's actually like, I can actually say that I'm enjoying it, even though it comes like, just like any other business, it comes with stuff you don't want to do. But at the end of the day, it just feels more nourishing, because yeah, it's kind of like, okay, it's a small mini victory, you know, but at the end of the day, those little things, they do add up. And before, the way I used to see baby steps and stuff, I used to feel like it was demoralizing for some reason. I was like, I was so set on a one one day I'm going to drop everything and you're like, it was just, I have such a different outlook and now I'm valuing my process more and honoring the steps that feel right for me.
Well, I love that because right, perfectionism falls under the like fantasy, right, category of what we do because it takes us out of the action and it doesn't make us, we avoid the discomfort of pursuing meaningful things, right? And that's, I just love that example because you're taking the risk to show up. And so many times we think weight loss is going to give us the resilience that we need to pursue our goals. And instead you're in reality, you're learning how a business really works without taking away your livelihood because you need your job. And so it's like this, and again, you're doing it on your own terms. And so you're not, so when it comes to the stuff that you don't want to do, you're being fulfilled by other parts of the process, which creates the sustainability. And I just love that what you said is so important for people who have that avoid protection strategy is like, oh my God, I feel different. Like we think as humans, how we're feeling now is how it's always going to be. But when we're trying to start something, it's like, you don't know how you're going to feel in 3 months. So just show up, right? Make that the value of like showing up and being real, authentic outside of just how you're showing up, but like authentic with how business and life actually works and a realness. And look, you're like, oh my God, I'm discovering all this stuff and I'm in a different place.
Yeah, just trying, honestly, just trying is something. And before I'd be like, no, unless I'm doing something remarkable here, it doesn't count. But no, those things that end up being remarkable, it's from all those little things that you did along the way. So yeah, it's just, it looks a lot different, you know, how I guess take on my side hustle and life in general. So I'm happy about that for sure.
Well, and I love that because that's changing your story of I need to be perfect or hide versus I can show up in process. And wow, it's actually pretty satisfying.
Yeah, and learning, you learn. And then it's kind of nice to learn as you go too, because if it was all figured out overnight, like, I don't know, I'm just getting so much more now that I have better tools and different values. So it feels good.
You guys both have just like really evolved and owned your story and changing it. And it's so inspiring. And is there anything that I haven't asked you before we wrap up that you want to share about your values and how that's evolved and changed your story?
I don't know, really, but changed the story. Yes, it has probably because of the binary, like, is, you know, if I'm always wrong, I've been striving to be right. You know, I'm going to be right. I got to be right. The opposite there. We haven't touched on that, but you mentioned that to me when we've been talking through the course. And I'm like, that's right. You're striving to be right then, because I'm afraid of, you know, going for the other one, the black and white and, you know, good. So, and then the other day I just had this, not epiphany, it wasn't, but how it transitions, like, I mean, midlife and transition, because I'm tired of the perimenopause and menopause wording, because how then you don't even know what the hell where you are. I like the transition in that. I can't remember the woman that started to using it, but anyway, so in this, that is also like, that's usually or quite often when women's like, oh, you're getting on the other side, kind of like, I don't care what other people think, it's about me now, you know, estrogen is low, kids are out of the deal. And that's when I felt like, you know what, I'm really out of that, like, not that I really had it, and it can be, I think it can be very needed with some, you know, little fight in us. A lot of us need that are quite often froze or avoid. But I really went out of that, like, I don't care what the people think about me, you know, fuck them, that attitude, to more like, I don't care what other people choose or do, because that's just a distraction. What I've used as a distraction, like, instead of staying with me, then it's made me not deal with where I am and live my life. So now that both, and I just love it. Like, I stay in my lane and I care about people, and I care because, you know, and I care about what they think about me, because if it's people I value, I care what they think about me. Yeah. Because it could be something that could be supportive of me, or, hey, Charlotte, that when we talked about how do you check in on people, I'd like people, if they have, you know, concerns, the people that I think is worthy of, you know, I would like them to ask, like, what are you doing here? Like, you know, taking in on me, the same for me, you know. So that shift is like, I don't care what they choose. I care about them. I share how they, you know, that they're okay, but I don't care about their choice and how they're living life, which is also meaning that somewhere down my line, I'm judging myself less for what I do and what I think. And that's is huge to me.
Yeah. Well, and what you're describing is a value of relational intelligence, right? Of like how someone relating versus what are they specifically doing. And you're valuing, again, that's part of the feminine is openness and mystery of all that stuff. So I love that. I love that, Charlotta. Mm-hmm. Mags.
And I also want to say one more thing, that this deal, just doing this year, the course with you, like for a year, and by no means healed or cure. This is a beginning, and it's a process that you say, it's about a 2-year process and dang right. But this first year had been a foundation, and now it's like, this is kind of cool. This is exciting. Where can I practice more? Because it doesn't mean that my story is dead or gone, by no means. And the thing about not meeting my basic needs here this afternoon, I was busy and not, waiting for the call and doing this. So I was going to skip eating today. So like, hello, here we go. Here's my story, basic needs. So I love that today, how I caught myself many times with body. It's not no need. So instead of also sitting here fretting about it, I went for a walk, got the few hours of daylight we have here now in Sweden. I got some fresh air. I went and made a meal, ate properly and, things like that. So my story is always running. So I love that. But now I'm more excited about it. It's like, oh, shoot, I caught myself, I can mother myself. I love that.
Well, yeah. And this is about, and I talked about this with Stacey last episode. I mean, ultimately we realize our story isn't as true as we think it is. Right. And what we're really working on is how do we relate to ourselves, right? How do we relate to our story differently? And that takes a while. And you can think about how much shift has happened just in these beginning places and how much just more and rebellious. You said you value rebellion. Like it's just a path to rebellion out of normal.
Yeah. I don't rebel just to rebel. I rebel because it's where, more control. Exactly. Yeah.
Mags, anything else you want to say?
Yeah. Well, just to add to that, for sure, it's an ongoing process. I think the difference is for me, like, I just feel good. And so I wanted to do a public service announcement out there just to be like, this is, for me, it's meant everything to me. Like, anyways, it's just, I feel so empowered, and I just feel like I think a lot of people will not question spending money on themselves, let's say, like to go on a trip or to like medicate themselves in very like, superficial ways, but then, maybe not take the time to actually dig a little deeper. So I just wanted to say that your support has meant everything to me and even the community and Charlotta, everyone. And I just feel that you're worth it. And I can't believe where I am now compared to last year. It's even though, yes, it is ongoing, it's still, you can be in a dramatically different place in a year. Like when your feelings of safety changes in this world, it just changes everything. So I just want to thank you, Ali, and just really say to people who are wondering if this is something that they should do. I just feel like, we're just used to dismissing a lot and not valuing it as much as like an all-inclusive trip or, stuff like that. But it's your mental health and your well-being that is going to be with you for the rest of your life. So I just want to say that your podcast and your work and your programs just for me have meant everything to me.
Oh, Mags, I'm over here like tearing up too.
It's just unbelievable to me. And like, it's just, so I hope that you know how much your community and all of us, we value you and how much your work is just doing so much for so many women and just empowering them.
Oh, thank you. I'm over here crying. I appreciate it. Oh. I do. And I'm just, I love your example of an all-inclusive trip because I'm like, this is an all-inclusive trip, but it's a different kind of trip.
It's a different kind of trip for sure. Yeah.
It's mind, body, soul.
Yeah.
But I love that example. So it is.
And the all-inclusive with all the food and drink you can eat.
That sounds like my kind of trip. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, we haven't even touched the food because I had my suspicions like, oh my God, she's going to tell us what to eat or what to do. And like, you have not told me a damn thing what to do in food or nothing. It's like, absolutely nothing. You've just been asking and I've been answering myself or I've been finding the way. So that was a huge relief. Like, she's not telling me to eat greens or beef or whatever, you know, that's all up to me.
It feels different at first where you're like,
yeah,
why isn't she telling me what to eat? Like, why?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's because you finally realize that the answers are in you and you're going to figure that out. You just have that support to get you there and kind of like be there as a safety net as you go. So
yeah, you don't want to be told what to eat. But then when you didn't tell us what to eat, it's like, whoa, what's going on here?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What is this?
There's definitely experiments to guide. And at the end of the day, though, it's like food is actually a really simple piece of this, you know?
Yeah. And you're so knowledgeable about food and, you know, what works, you know, you have all that knowledge. So you're there, you have it and everything, but that's not your leading deal. And that's what this isn't, you know, this isn't what it's about. But I love that, how I'm like, I don't want her to tell me what to do or what to eat. And then when you did, it's like, okay. I'm on my own. No, not on my own, but I'm like, whoa, this is cool.
It just takes getting used to, that's all, because we're so used to like being told what to eat and when. So yeah.
And what's wrong and right. And
yeah,
eat keto, eat vegan.
Yeah.
And
that's all you have to do is eat keto and not sugar, eat sugar and you'll
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you both so much. Oh, Mags, also, I would not be a supportive entrepreneur if I didn't have you plug your business. I meant to have you do that before, and then I totally forget. So I'll include it in the show link, the show notes, but tell people a little bit about your business.
Yes. So it's right up this alley of, it's kind of like fusing my poetry and art with emotions and all of that. So I make handcrafted frames and it's called thesparklingmud.com is the website. Yeah. I basically write poetry and it's a lot of, you know, a lot about feelings, and the whole thing of it is because our society dismisses a lot. It's just like the idea is like a safe space to actually honor those feelings, whatever they are, you know? So yeah, it's basically handcrafted frames and poetry that I write that, yeah, it can be a gift. It can be a gift for yourself. It could be, yeah, home decor. It's all of that. So yeah, thesparklingmud.com. And yeah, you'll see one product a month added because I'm going at my own pace. So yeah.
What? You do take custom orders. So
I do. Yeah, that's right. So yeah, it's really in the early stages and I'm just enjoying it for now. And I feel like it's kind of showing that I don't know, it just feels different, you know, kind of like what you're saying with time and stuff like that, slowing it down because you're showing up where you've nourished yourself. It just looks different as well. So I'm just feeling better about it where I'm not competing with anything or anyone and just kind of going at my own pace. But yeah, it's up there. It's out there.
I love it. So thesparklingmud.com, and also you're on Instagram, right, as well?
Yes, at thesparklingmud. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you both for your time and for your courage. We joked it feels like ash, but it also feels pretty damn good, right? When you're basking in the results.
That's exactly how it feels right now. Yeah.
Good. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, Health Rebels and Visionary Storytellers, for tuning in today. If you know someone who would benefit from this episode, please share it with them. And remember, we have transcripts of our episodes at alishapiro.com/podcast for your non-audio friends and family. And if you can, I'd love it if you can leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps more people find the show. And both actions, reviewing and sharing with others, helps us change the cultural narrative around food, weight, and our bodies. Thanks for engaging in a different kind of conversation. And remember, always, your body truths are unique, discoverable, profound, and liberating.